Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast, the first one for 2020. It's for January 20th. There's so many 20s in there, I can't even speak right. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Saturday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too, and to all your listeners. 2020. Seems like our eyesight should be improving or something with a year like this, but...
Why should things get better?
I know. I'm good. I had a good New Year's. I didn't really have a break, but it was refreshing. You know, not because in Japan the New Year's holidays are long, and some people get time off and some people don't. But our schedules were staggered, so I was working. I was off a day, on a day, off a day, on a day, and which was really nice. And the nice thing. You know, ironically, the nice thing about not having any consecutive days off not having to make plans to go anywhere or to do anything.
All right. Well, that's a break then. You said you didn't have a break. Then you had a break because you didn't have to make plans to go anywhere anything.
I had single days off, you know, like Monday I would be working, you know, like New Year's Eve was a work day, but New Year's Day wasn't, and the second was a work day, and the third wasn't. So what it means is we didn't go nowhere. We would just, on the day off, the wife and I would go for a walk.
All right, well, that's,
you know,
a break.
We were just, yeah, but we were chilling, but we weren't spending hours on the train going places. You know, we weren't obligated
that's
to
a good
other
thing.
People.
That's
a
good
real
thing.
Good thing.
That's a good
thing.
Yeah,
that was superb. It's like, right. It was very restful.
Well, you know, I was thinking we should have started our tape session here at 8:20 in the evening, because that would mean this was the podcast for the 20th of January of 2020,
right.
And military time starting at 2020. But
right.
We couldn't do that. We couldn't. It was impossible. But it's the opening show of the year in the Reiwa era. So we've got that going.
Ooh.
For us. It is our... I know you'd be excited.
Yeah.
It is our 10th season of JBW. So it's a milestone year for us. And in fact, this is show 406. So we didn't celebrate our milestone 400th show last year. But we are into double digits in years now. So that's good. So we'll look forward to celebrating show 500 sometime next year, he says, laughing. Meanwhile, on this week's show, we've got a chat.
I'm already dancing. I already got the cake ready, man.
Cake, yes. Chocolate, I hope. You know, that's my favorite. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former Chunichi Dragons three-time batting champion Alonzo Powell. We're going to discuss the Hall of Fame and signs, everywhere there's signs. Let's start swinging.
Good. Manfred, there you go, all Manfred Manning on us. Manfred Manning up.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I got a chance on Wednesday night to talk to Alonzo Powell. He won batting titles from 1994 through 96 when he was with the Dragons, and... those teams finished the Bridesmaids three times, I remember. Not those particular seasons, but teams he was on. And despite being tantalizingly close to the CDL title, they never won. And Alonzo eventually went to Hanshin to finish out a stellar career in Japan. And after his playing days, he became a hitting coach with the Seattle Mariners, the San Diego Padres, the Houston Astros, dun dun, and most recently the San Francisco Giants. And now he is an organizational batting coach with the Dragons, and he is already back in Japan. He arrived on Wednesday, and we sat down and talked on Thursday. I think I said I talked to him on Wednesday, but that's not right. We talked on Thursday.
Get your dates right, Gibson.
Get your days right, Gibson. He got back into town or into Japan on Wednesday, and we talked on Thursday night. And before the interview and after the interview, we talked about NFL, you know, playoffs and stuff like that. We talked about his situation with the Astros. We did... you discussed the matter of him being the batting coach when the sign-stealing via technology situation went down, and you'll hear what he had to say about that. We spoke about myriad of topics, and we had a good first interview of the year with Alonzo Powell. So let's take a listen. All right, I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by Alonzo Powell, former Chunichi Dragon star, three years consecutively winning the Central League Batting Championship, and now he is back with the Dragons and back in Japan. Welcome back, my brother.
Yeah, thanks, John, for having me. I'm very excited to be back with the Dragons. It's been a few years, and you know, I'm happy to be back to do what I can to help the team be successful.
Now, before we get started on your MPB return, I know you were with the Astros when they were involved in some activity that has garnered some punishment and some bans and subsequently some terminations for some people. So I have to ask, I'm contractually obligated to ask, what did you know and when did you know it?
Well, after the investigation with MLB, and I can't answer any questions on that.
I figured, but I had to ask. You know, like I said, you know, it's not a congressional hearing, so we're all right with that. But and I'm assuming that had nothing to do with your return to Japan as well.
No, it had nothing to do with my return. I made a decision. You know, I had the opportunity to potentially go back with the Giants, but, you know, the opportunity came for me to come here with Chunichi, and I jumped at the opportunity. You know, here the Dragons have been great to me as a professional, and you know, being here changed my life. And I figure maybe, you know, if it ends the way I want it to end, you know, maybe I can end my coaching and playing career here with the Dragons in Nagoya.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. So how did this happy return come about? Now, you're saying that there was an opportunity out there with the San Francisco Giants, but yeah, how did this particular thing come about?
Well, you know, at the end of the year, the Bochy, he noticed, he notified the team in spring training that he was going to retire.
Yes, I remember that announcement, yeah.
Yeah, and usually, you know, when things like that happens, you know, there's going to be a kind of a domino effect. You know, new regime, and, you know, at the end of the year, they told us that we're free to look for other opportunities, you know, and I took my opportunity to look with Chunichi, and I made the decision that this is where I wanted to be, and now I'm here, you know, along with, you know, Yoda, you know, Yoda's blessing and ownership's blessing. And, you know, I'm happy to be here.
Oh, we're really happy to have you back. Now, what is your relationship with Yoda?
Well, you know, me and Yoda played together as teammates. And it just so happened through the years, you know, we've kind of kept in contact. You know, when he was a broadcaster, I think it was NHK. I'm not sure on the company, but I think it was NHK.
Mm-hmm.
He came to America a few times. And as I was coaching, you know, we would run into each other. You know, and we would talk, and then one day we ended up going to dinner one night, and you know, just kind of got back, you know, retouched, and you know, talked about old times. And then in the last few years, I've come over to Japan in the winter to do a couple clinics. You know, up in Akita,
right?
The Akita area,
right?
And then I did one in Okayama.
Okay.
And Yoda was a part of those clinics, and you know, we just, you know, kind of talking baseball, and you know, nothing really came of that. But then a year ago, you know, Yoda got the job as the manager,
right?
And he says, if something ever happened in San Francisco, he says, I know you have a job in San Francisco, but if something ever happened in San Francisco, would you consider coming back to the Dragons? And I said, yes, I would love to come back to the Dragons. You know, that was something that, you know, I thought about a long time ago. But, you know, just, you know, nothing was really there. You know, I was doing my thing, and the Dragons, you know, were doing theirs. But when Yoda came with that offer, you know, I got to thinking about it. And, you know, everything worked out, and that's how I got here.
He just seems highly competitive, and I think losing really must have taken some years off of his mental health last year. But the Central League is really competitive, so how do you think he responds this year coming into this new season with some potential?
Well, you know, Shinichi's a young team. You know, it's a young team, got some exciting players. You know, they do a lot of things really good. And I think just the, you know, the youngness of the team, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time for this team to gel together and to understand how good they really are. But, you know, Yoda seems like, you know, he's really patient. You know, he's excited, you know, about the future of this, the franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just got to kind of take it day by day and see how the young guys on, in the organization, see how they grow. And, you know, anything can happen. You know, guys put it together and play well. You know, you can put yourself in a situation to get yourself in the playoffs, and anything can happen.
Now, what's going to be your role?
My role is going to be, you know, hitting. I'm going to be a hitting coach, but I'm going to have kind of a three-layer role, but more a dual role. I'll be doing some stuff with the main team, uh-huh. And I'll also be doing some stuff with the farm team.
Okay.
And if needed, you know, if something happens and they need a foreign player, you know, there's a possibility where, you know, I go back to the States and scout some foreign players to potentially bring somebody over.
I got you. Okay. All right, so three-layer, three-pronged approach, that's going to be awesome. And you're going to be busy. It seems like you're going to be going between the farm. I mean, I know they play those farm games early at Nagoya Stadium still.
Now most of the games are at Nagoya Kijo.
Okay, all right.
And so, you know, it's been nice. You know, I went back there today since I got in last night. And I went back there 2 years ago when I was visiting. And just to see Nagoya Kijo after all of the years.
Yeah, it's still old. It's still old.
Brought a lot of good memories to me.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's weird seeing it without the grandstands and in the outfield.
Yeah, they took a lot of that stuff away. Yeah. So I remember years ago in the 90s, you showing me, or I remember you having a stack of printouts with stats, and they call it analytics now. But how much are you going to get involved with that aspect with the team now?
Well, you know, the thing with the analytics, you got to understand how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have all the numbers in the world, and if you don't know how to process it and how to use it, it's not going to do you much good. I'm not going to come in and say you have to do it this way, you got to do it that way. But if you know, guys are open, you know, the organization is open, you know, I'll show them what I've learned over the years and in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
and try to bring some new ideas to the Dragons.
Okay. Now, you've been away for a while. I know you know some of the players, but how much of this Dragons team do you really know about? And, you know, it has a lot of young players, as you said, but how much do you know about these guys in particular?
Well, I've done my research since I've got the job in November, you know, and looked at some video and looked at some stats. And, you know, what you see is a young team that makes really good contact, you know, and it looks like, you know, I haven't been in a Nagoya Dome recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it knocks your power down. But, you know, I kind of equate that to coaching in San Francisco. You know, it's a hard park to hit home runs.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now you just got to do some little things. You know, if we have a great contact team, great hitting team. You know, our job is to get hits. And I look at it this way. You know, if you're in the Tokyo Dome, you know, it's more, you know, more of an advantage if you have power in the Tokyo Dome because the ball carries and the ball flies really well. So you got an opportunity to hit more home runs.
Right.
But you got to look at it the other way in Nagoya. It's a lot of more space. So you have to hit more doubles. And, a runner on first and second, if we can hit a double with the Dragons, that's two runs. And if you're in a Tokyo Dome, you equate that to a two-run home run in the Tokyo Dome.
I got you.
You know, you don't want to say small ball. You don't want to play small ball, but you just want to keep the line moving. And, you know, we have a good enough lineup to where, you know, I think we have the opportunity to be able to keep the line moving.
Okay. Now, what about the opposition? How are you going to get familiar with the other teams?
You know, it's pretty much the same. You know, I've got to look at the numbers and, you know, look at some video and see what you see on the opponents. And, you know, but, you know, I'm not playing against the other team's position players, so I don't really have to study the position players. You know, my job is to learn the other team's pitching,
right?
And to see what they do, and see where they make their mistakes, and see where they're good, and formulate a game plan with my other coaches, with the Dragons, and to try to put our team in the best situation to be successful.
Right. All right. So you got some foreign powers. You got some foreign pop in the lineup, but there's also these two young players, Akira Neo, the 2018 draft pick, and then Takaya Ishikawa. And this team really could use one of those kids to pop somewhere down the line soon, maybe this season. How do you approach trying to develop these young players at a maybe accelerated rate?
Well, you know, it's going to be a group effort. You know, myself along with the other hitting coaches, along with the players. You know, my job is to get to know those guys. You know, those guys' job is to get to know me. And as we get to know each other, you know, you can exchange some different ideas with them to try to get to understand what they're thinking, and you know what they need to do to be successful. And you know, and the faster that we can learn each other, hopefully, you know, the faster we can accelerate their development.
Gotcha. Now, launch angle has been, you know, it's just taken over the American game, it seems now. Are you into that, and how are you going to maybe bring that approach to the Dragons whenever it's applicable?
Well, you know, I think number one, you know, you have to conquer the hitting skill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be able to be a good hitter first. And once you prove and you've shown that you're a good hitter, now you can make some small adjustments with the swing to try to get, you know, get the ball in the air a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, like I said before, playing in Nagoya, we have to figure out, is that beneficial for our guys to hit the ball in the air?
Sure.
You know, yes, if you're in the Tokyo Dome, yeah, you probably want to hit the ball in the air a little bit more. But now in Nagoya, I think we got to institute a line drive first and look for doubles. And if you're strong enough and you hit the ball right, you know, you're going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. You know, our goal is to get our guys to hit the ball hard.
Yeah, I noticed that, especially with some of the younger players, that their swings were a little bit different in the outdoor, you know, the Jingus and the Tokyo Domes, where the ball seems to carry a little bit more, but that they had a different approach, and they seemed to hit a little bit better at Nagoya Dome, where they weren't changing the swing sometimes. So I'm just wondering how much, I mean, it just seemed like there was, of course you got young players, but there was a lot of confusion in terms of you know, what the approach is always going to be, especially when you've got this situation where you play so many games against the same pitchers. You know, you've experienced this schedule where one week
right.
You're playing at home against the Carp and you're facing Sasaoka, and the very next week you're playing on the road against the Carp and you're facing Sasaoka. So how do you go about, I mean, getting guys to make the adjustments and then go back to different kinds of swings and different kinds of approaches?
And, you know, the biggest key, you know, as coaches, you know, our job is to get our guys to have a consistent approach. And, you know, I wouldn't want my guys to have one approach on the road and one approach at home, because somewhere in that transition, you're going to lose that approach for a couple of days adjusting to the new approach to where you're at.
Mm.
So let's have a consistent approach that we can take on the road and at home. I think that's my biggest job, along with the other coaches that I'm working with.
Gotcha. All right. So do you plan to have some, like, situational hitting implementation that you are going to bring over from the States?
You know, again, talking with the, you know, the other hitting coaches, you know, we're on the same page on that. You know, yes, we're going to have different drills where we put them in different situations. So now when you get into a game, you know, those become second nature. And, you know, you understand the game. You understand what the pitcher's possibilities are, what you need to do in that situation. How do you need to execute that situation? You know, and the biggest thing, you know, it's almost like studying for a test. You know, we've all been there before. When you prepare for that test and you study, when the test comes, you know, you're not nervous.
Gotcha.
But we've all been on the other side of it, when you wait to the last minute and you cram for that test, and now that test is there, and you're not sure of the answer. So our job is to get these guys prepared for different situations, so when they get into them, that they understand what they need to do to execute. Is everybody going to be perfect? No. But we're looking for players that can execute certain situations, and that's going to help us win games. And, you know, and as a coach, what you're looking for winning players, players that know how to execute to help you win.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't know about you. I was never nervous for any test, whether I was prepared or not, but I mean, maybe that was me. All right. Tests don't scare me. One last question before we let you go. What do you think about Tuffy Rhodes not being in the Hall of Fame here?
You know, I don't know all of the details that go into being in the Hall of Fame, but what he did for Japanese baseball was incredible. You know, I got to see, you know, Tuffy when he first came in, and, you know, I followed his career when I went back to the States. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had a remarkable career. I mean, arguably one of the greatest foreign players to ever play in Japan. And it would be really nice to see somebody, a peer of mine that I played with, to be in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, he's got my vote to get into the Hall of Fame. But again, I would have to find out, you know, what the requirements are, what the criteria is to be a Hall of Famer. But I mean, he's got to be somewhere close to it. And, you know, and I think in due time, you know, they'll get it right, and you know, they'll get him in.
Okay, I trust you, but you please spread the word, because these brothers, they haven't seen it yet. They have not seen the light. Somebody get a light and shine it in their face, because they haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, no, you know, he had a remarkable career, you know.
But yeah, incredible career. You are correct. All right, enjoy Nagoya. It has changed so much since you've been gone, and it's a really nice place to live. Not that it wasn't before out there. Were you in Chikusaku before? I can't remember where your address
was. I was in close to the zoo, Higashiyama Zoo.
Yeah, Chikusaku. Yeah, Lord. I'm pretty sure you were. So, because I moved out there after you left. But it's real nice. It's still a nice place to live. So enjoy your time out there. We will see. I'll be in camp. I'm planning to go, so I'll see you down there. Thank you very much for taking the time, and we'll talk to you again for sure this year.
All right, thanks for having me, and looking forward to seeing you.
All right, man, take it easy.
All right, take care.
All right, so I love how these players stay in touch. We hear these stories about players staying in touch, and you know that when they were playing together that they needed the interpreter to communicate, probably, but now we hear about all these guys. Scott Mathis is another guy who's always talking about his teammates and how they communicate, sure. But we know that they don't speak each other's languages, so I just think it's great to hear about these guys staying in touch. But
with Yoda is really interesting, because I'm next time I see Yoda, I'm just going to talk to him in English and see what happens, because how come I get the feeling that he speaks a lot more English than he lets on?
Well, we'll just ask Alonzo about it.
Yeah, no, because
that's probably
that sort of jibes with, you know, Yoda freaked me out, because, you know, people in Japan know who I am, kind of, sort of. I'm like the furniture, the folding chair that's been sitting at Tokyo Dome, you know, down the foul line for like 25 years, and everybody, oh yeah, that's the chair that's at Tokyo Dome. It's all beaten up and stuff, and that's the way I am, you know, because, you know, when I got gray hair, you know, the PR guy from the Lotte Marines started calling me sensei. And when I got like so much gray hair, you couldn't like notice that I had other colored hair.
Right.
So, but people know who I am, you know, and I say, oh, do you remember me? Oh, yeah, yeah, I know who you are. I don't know your name, or I don't know where you work, or I never read anything you wrote. But so Yoda, one day when he was the pitching coach of the Rakuten Eagles about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. I was sitting on the bench in Chiba, and he said, Jim-san.
Wow.
And I'm going like, I mean, we had talked. We talked a lot, but I couldn't imagine he would actually bother to remember my name.
You know, yeah, or say, hey, Jim-san, yeah.
Yeah. So or maybe it was Alan-san. I don't remember which it was. They're both on my, of course, they're both You know, I'm like the guy who says, you know, wearing a name tag, and when somebody says, "Hey, Bob," and he says, "Wow, you got like ESP."
Right.
So, but he wasn't sitting in a place where he'd be able to see it. So, but anyway, so I figured he did know, or he had spotted it, and you know, and then was playing it cool or something. But he's about the only Japanese NPB person who ever called me by my name. So that's
all right. All right. So what stood out for you with the chat?
Oh, geez, a whole bunch of things. But I'm going to try to go with, I guess, well, two things. I'll just run down the list. But first of all, yeah, Nagoya Stadium. As soon as you mentioned Nagoya Stadium, I had the same sort of first response as him, which is, what happened to my ballpark?
Hey, wait a second, buddy. That was my ballpark. That was the site of my first Japanese game.
Have you been there since they've...
of course, yes, since they removed and gutted it.
Yeah. Oh, you have been there.
Yes.
You have been there.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I knew exactly what he was talking about. They took the the seats out. And yes.
Yeah, see. Yeah, they... I mean, I was there... The first time I actually ever went there, when it was your stadium, was when Kenjiro Kawasaki was signed as a free agent. And I went down there to interview him. And he was working out with the minor leaguers at Nagoya Stadium instead of Nagoya Dome.
Mm-hmm.
And I went like, whoa. The first thing they did, it was still a stadium then. It still had the grandstand and everything. It was about 2000. And... saw the grandstand, but they had cut into the they had basically removed most of the outfield seating to make that little tiny bandbox the same dimensions as Nagoya Dome.
Okay.
Right. So anyway, I went, okay, and then I went back like 12 years later or 13 years later, and I'm going, what the heck?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, the only things left is just the little first part of the first tier stands behind home plate.
Yeah, it's like I told Alonzo, it's still old.
It is still old. It looks like every other ballpark, little country ballpark in Japan now. So yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, what happened to my ballpark? I thought his general observation about the Dragons was the young and they make good contact. They make a lot of contact.
Is
reasonably accurate. I think the young is in my eyes, everybody's young. So I mean, they're guys.
Younger than you.
Yeah, well, Hirata, Josuke Hirata, and Yohei Oshima are certainly not young anymore.
No.
But yeah, but the guys, you know, there are some young players, Yota Kyoda and Takahashi, who are still in the fat parts of their career.
Correct.
So yeah, and I think his approach was interesting, and of course your question about analytics is interesting because analytics have changed so much in the last 5 years.
Certainly, yes.
5 years ago, all the analytics were was performance, analyzing performance results.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now with the Rapsodo and Driveline and TrackMan and Driveline is a company, not an analytics device, but they use tracking devices to track swings and balls and release points and things.
Mm-hmm.
That people are now able to monitor their performance. Monitor their motion and results, not batted results, not whether it's a hit or a walk, but you know how hard the ball flies, the quality, in essence measure the quality of the ball movement.
Okay.
And quality in terms of its properties. Measure the properties of the ball movement. How well does it come off the bat? How does the bat swing? What's the angle of the bat? Blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, 5 years ago, you could say analytics. Okay, we're talking about that Bill James stuff. And now you can say analytics, and we could be talking about 100 different things. And so obviously that was where now, of course, everybody's got, you know, everybody's tuned in, or at least has that option. And in Japan, since last year, all the main parks are required to have TrackMan, so that they can criticize the umpires. I mean, judge the umpires.
Yes, evaluate.
Evaluate. That's the word we have for criticism in Japan.
Hashtag high heat.
Yes. And I guess that's correct. Like I said in the interview, Alonzo had this huge stack of paper, and it was paper. And now that, you know, this is 25 years later, let's say, it's right. A completely different situation. So some of the numbers are the same. Some of the analytical information, right. The data is the same.
The numbers in Japan have traditionally been, what does this guy throw in this situation?
In situation X, because they'd have situation A to Z.
Right.
Sometimes A to double Z.
Chart. They'd have Excel spreadsheets, basically.
Yes.
That would be highlighted. And every team had them. And for every pitcher.
Yes.
And so you would look and see and try not to have your vision blurred. But that's what, that was Japanese baseball, is trying to predict, and then they'd have meetings and saying, well, please look at row J3, at cell J3, because that's the one that matters in this case. This is when the one we're looking at. And you hear all the papers rustling in the players' meetings that would go on for 2 hours as they combed through these spreadsheets.
Right, comb is right.
So that was interesting. I thought that contrast, and I think right now it's like, some teams, and SoftBank does everything on their SoftBank Yahoo Japan iPads.
Okay, yeah.
And other teams have access to that kind of stuff. A lot of teams give the players stuff. They can watch the videos on their portable devices and so on.
Right,
but yeah,
right,
things
right.
have changed quite a bit, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
So that was interesting. So, yeah, I think the whole bit about knowing... I thought his bit about preparation was very succinct and astute.
Mm. I agree.
Yeah. Be ready for the things that are likely to happen. And I love that. It says, these are things we can teach, because I love talking to the coaches, because especially coaches. And the last thing I want to say is how ironic that it is that, he had an MLB gig, but jumped at the chance to come to Japan. Now, of course, there was uncertainty in the air in America, and with the Giants and Bruce Bochy leaving.
But right.
The fact is that he probably had a better than a 1 in 100 chance of staying in San Francisco, or getting another job, coaching.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But getting a coaching job for a non-Japanese in Japan is really the odds are greater than 1 in 100.
Yeah, yes, I agree.
They just do not exist, and there's a huge line of former players. I mean, there is a line who are going, me, next, me.
Yeah, I know. Settle down there, Bucky.
Exactly.
But
so
yeah,
I just love the chance that he got it. I remember Tom O'Malley had a similar chance briefly, but they're so rare, and I'm so glad he got the opportunity, and he didn't, he did a Zach Neal. when the opportunity came, you didn't have to ask twice.
Right. And I remember talking to him a long time ago and asking him if he wanted to become a coach and a manager. So he didn't say it directly in this interview, but I think you heard him refer to it that, if things work out, he'll finish his career as a coach or possibly a manager here in Japan. But first, I just wanted to say he called me back on Thursday after having a meeting with coaches. So they're already working. And I know I remember hearing one of a successful coach from another sport, talking about the fact that you as the leader of the group, so if you're the manager and you have a philosophy, you are coaching your coaches, and you're coaching them to coach the players the way you want. So the fact that we hear that it's January 15th and he's already here in Japan for camp that doesn't start for a couple weeks, and he's working with the coaches, already getting prep done for the season, that's impressive. But we know Alonso as a hitter, but I think he snuck a back foot slider in there, and probably the kind that we'll probably hear more from him as we go through the season, because I do want to have him on the show a few times, especially if the Dragons have some success, it'll be very relevant to have him on the show. But when he spoke about the numbers in the video that he was talking about, saying that he's looking at that he had already seen numbers of the Dragons players and he had watched video of them, and he said he needs to look at the other pitchers and see where they make their mistakes. I thought that was backdoor slider, back foot slider, whatever you want to call it, but I think that's really important, because you want to know when a guy is missing with his slider, where it's going. Is it high? Is it off the plate on this side? Where he's missing with his fastball, where he's missing with other breaking balls and stuff like that. And I thought that was, like you said very astute, but you didn't get into the detail. And I thought that was the detail of that part. And the part about the approaches. He was a line drive hitter, and I remember the first time I interviewed him, he said, look, I'm a line drive hitter. It's just that sometimes when I get, he said the same thing as Hitoshi Tamura once told me, the former Bay Stars and SoftBank Hawks player. Awesome. He said, I hit line drives, and just sometimes the line drives go a little bit farther than the other ones. And so that line drive first approach I really like. But on a personal note, I also loved what he said about Nagoya Stadium, which he called by its Japanese name, Nagoya Kyujo. And
I went right over my head.
I'm sure it did. And just like a home run. I told this
that line drive carried.
I told this story before on the show, but there was a park. There is a park right across the street from Nagoya Stadium. And when I was living there, some of my buddies and I would occasionally have to go there because we couldn't get a gym. So in desperation to play ball, because we were all together, and you know how hard it is to play basketball in Japan. You can't just go to a school, and there aren't very many parks with basketball goals. And there was this round court that was fairly small, and it actually looked like a baseball in that the three-point lines almost came together. It was so small. And right in between the three-point lines, center cut, was a pathway for people to walk through. So if people were trying to get through, you had to stop the game and let them walk past. And one day we were out there in the summer playing, and I hear this voice from across the fence shouting, I'll show you, I'm a two-sport guy. And I look over, and it's Alonso. And I never could get him on the court, though. And I think that I surmised it was his baseball career was more valuable than proving he could beat some reporter in basketball. But I'm still out there, buddy. I'm waiting for you. So anytime you want to go.
That was the first thing. One of the first things he ever said to me when we spoke about, just shortly before his trade to the Dragons. To the Tigers, excuse me, was that, we were both familiar with San Francisco. And I said, well, what were you doing growing up in San Francisco? I said, playing basketball.
Yeah. Yeah.
So baseball was going to pay money.
Exactly. And so, he talked about some other things that are not in this chat. It was, we have almost 18 minutes of an interview here, but I think we talked for an hour. So so it was really fun talking to him. And I hope he brings, that kind of success that he had, or just maybe a change of approach, or just bring something to the Dragons so that they can compete and be a better team this year. But they were not bad last year. It was it was a team that was on the verge, I thought, and had some other things gone right. I think it would have been able to have some success. So we'll see. And like I said, if one of these young kids can pop, sort of in the vein that Toshiki Abe at second base for them just came out of nowhere, And oh yeah, it was very successful.
I missed him. Yeah, I know. Yeah, he was a very underrated player. So he was the guy. I didn't vote for him for Gold Glove, mm-hmm. but it was only because I didn't see him play enough.
Oh well, I did. I don't think he was Gold Glove level defensively, but offensively he really made it some impact for that team. So, he's a guy who's not young. So,
how old is he?
He's right around 30. Hang on, let me check.
Oh, get out of here!
Let me check though, he's 30. Sorry. He's 30 years old. He's 30 years old. So yeah, he's not young. So they'll probably still have to look toward the.
He's
people,
young. But... He was only young in my eyes since I'd never heard of him before.
That's a surprise.
His 100 some plate appearances had gone under my radar.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy you like to sniff out.
I do, but when I do see these guys now and again, but usually what happens when I'm looking. When I'm combing through the minor leagues,
mm-hmm.
I just do, I don't have TrackMan and StatCast and
you don't?
No, I do
get
not.
That app. There's an app for everything.
Right. Yeah. Well, if you build it, I'll use it.
All right.
No, but basically, I'll run like some sort of metric on guys. Okay, let's say commonly use offensive winning percentage for hitters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if a guy just, I'm not going to go into the details, but if a guy's, good, he's going to have 700 or 800. If he's superstar-like, he'll be 800 or something. So I look for, 25-year-olds who might be 800s and 24-year-olds who might be 700s and, 23-year-olds and so on down on the line. And it's a fairly high bar, but it's, it sneaks out guys who had exceedingly good performances
at
young ages. So I was going to always miss a guy who, who didn't turn pro until after he'd been an amateur for, 6 years out of high school.
Hey, I'm leading the charge I am leading the charge for late bloomers. I know what late bloom or blooming late is and that it exists and I'm living proof. So I wanted to take the time to thank Dragon Soul as well. He did send some questions in that I actually used during the chat. So thank you very much, Soul, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. And thank you very much, Alonzo. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed the interview.
Yeah, I'm going to be bugging you.
Most of all, Jim enjoyed it, so everybody else. I'm going to be
bugging Alonzo left and right, so I hope you have that phone on. Don't block me. Don't block me, bro.
he didn't ask you for my number so he could block me.
He wanted to know what that number is coming in, right? All right, so thanks a lot, guys. Thanks again for the chat, and much appreciated. Let's move along, make a four-seam transition, and talk about the Hall of Fame. Now, I did ask Alonzo that question about Tuffy, and we did have the Hall of Fame announcements this past week. So the class of 2020 named But No Tuffy Rhodes Again, but the class included, the headliner was Koichi Tabuchi, former catcher with the Hanshin Tigers, and he got in via the experts division. And two others were elected, former college skippers, Yuichi Maeda and Nenzo Ishii. And one thing I'd like to say about guys like these two gentlemen is that many of us hear these names for the first time and probably the last time when we say them on the show, because these contributors are not that much in the public eye in some cases. But this is part of the grassroots level, I feel, of Japan or Japanese baseball that creates the product that we see in MPB. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important. So these guys really are heroes and they just don't have the notoriety, but we do like to, at least on this show, we do like to mention them. And I know Jim knows a little bit more about some of these guys at times through the years, because we've mentioned them every year, the guys who are not, former players or don't have big names. But these contributions are heroic, because that's what, as I said, leads to the product that we so much enjoy. So we are glad that these guys are in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I was, you know, from a personal, selfish standard, which is really the only standard I have.
I was going to say, is there other standpoints?
I know. John's going.
Don't hang a slider like that.
Hashtag high heat.
You mean there's another side to Jim? He's what's good for Jim? No. I just wanted to sort of ease into that one and sound like a normal person for a change.
Sound like.
Exactly. I'm not fooling anybody. But the great thing for me was that with the college coaches, because I was going, okay, too, the other group is elected by the special committee, which is a small band of people. I believe it includes the commissioner of baseball, the head of the Hall of Fame, and a couple of other people, and they elect these non-professional baseball players.
Correct.
And that's how Horace Wilson and Lefty O'Doul and, you know, poets and so on got in, and they picked these two guys who had kind of a low vote total last year, but they had three votes, and I think they needed like 10 to get in, and they both were elected this year. And the only thing I would say any more about it, and sometimes these stories are really interesting, and sometimes I just can't connect with them when I hear them at the Hall of Fame.
Right.
But this one was great because two guys, one who I've talked to a number of times, spoke on behalf of one of the Waseda coach, Mr. Ishii.
Mm-hmm.
And the former Waseda guy who spoke was former Marines and Bay Stars and New York Mets pitcher Satoru Komiyama, who's now the manager of Waseda University.
Mm-hmm.
And so he spoke, and I've been kind of in touch with him a bit, and I have to talk to him for a couple of things, couple of stories and other things. And another guy who I've wanted to talk to is the former head coach of the former manager of Keio University, who's Hideaki Okubo, who's less famous, was not much of a famous professional baseball player, but he's a guy. And as you were speaking about Tuffy Rhodes in the Hall of Fame, I only know Mr. Okubo because on a cold, windy day about 17 years ago, Tuffy dragged Mr. Okubo to dinner with me and the ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we met. And he's got a really amazing story. So if anybody who reads Japanese, I recommend that they look up Mr. Hideaki Okubo's Wikipedia page. And there's some good anecdotes. And I'd been wanting to talk to him for a number of years. He was Junichi Tazawa's amateur baseball, corporate league baseball manager before Tazawa went to the majors. And so I want to learn. I've got an appointment set up with him. So I was able to connect with these two guys. So that part was wonderful. And I did miss, I haven't heard a lot about what Tabuchi said, except the interesting thing was this is a guy who is easily the third, by my humble, okay, not so humble, estimations. Mm. He was the third greatest catcher to ever play in NPB behind Katsuya Nomura, and number two. Any guesses?
Atsuya Furuta.
Good guess, because Atsuya Furuta is in the Hall of Fame. But no, my number two in all of NPB history is Shinosuke Abe.
Oh, he just retired. That's not fair. That's a trick question.
I know. I got active players on that list, so which is kind of anyway. So Tabuchi, the interesting thing to me, and
you're transitioning into the question I had for you. So I guess.
Okay.
So the question I had for you was, what did you think about Tabuchi? Being in the Hall of Fame.
He wasn't really a quality player, you know. But no, he was a tremendous hitter, and he was a tremendous hitter. His defense was never really his big thing. He was the guy who spoke for him in the ceremony. Is a his former catcher from university, and he talked about the graceful arcs of Tabuchi's home runs that drew all kinds of fans to watch him play at Jingu Stadium, including lots of men and women both flocked to watch his graceful home runs, and he spoke for about 20 minutes along various lines like that. Tabuchi was much more interesting. He said, I went to high school, and when I went to high school at Hosei University, they had 100, the Hosei University, I think he went to the high school connected to Hosei University. There were like 150 kids in the program, and I got nothing. He said, the only way I'm going to get a chance to play is to do something that nobody else wants to do. I've heard this a bunch of times in NPB, largely by catchers. Mm-hmm. And the way he made himself stand out was he would catch batting practice. He said, and I had no idea how to catch. I knew nothing.
Huh.
And from that, and of course from his tremendous hitting ability, but that skill and his tremendous hitting ability made him one of the, you know, top. I'm not going to guess a number, but probably top 20 or 30 players in NPB history. Oh. The reason he wasn't in the Hall of Fame before was just because the rules changed in 2008 when he was coaching. Before that, you had to be out of uniform for 5 years before you could be elected. Be on the ballot. And he was on the ballot for a very short time before he was instantly named manager of the Daiei Hawks. And then after they changed, and then he was a coach all the time. So basically he just stopped being a coach a few years ago and he was elected. So, okay. Now, the last,
all right. All right. Before you go ahead, jump to another.
You're just
jumping from topic to topic. Are you in there by yourself? Hello? Is this thing on? Can you hear me? I just wanted to make a comment about him because I had only really known him. I never really got to see him play, but I did see him in interviews and I saw him on TV a lot, and I just thought this is such a soft-spoken, caring person. And he caught that way in the things that the highlights that I've seen with, you know, they usually show him hitting.
Right.
And he certainly didn't hit that way, but he just caught with such care when I see him cradle the ball in some of the, you know, you don't get a lot of highlights with him catching, like I said, but what I've seen. And that's his personality seemed to come out in the way he caught. That's the one thing I wanted to say, because he's so soft spoken and such a nice gentleman. I've seen him at Tokyo Dome very often, and you know, he's there a lot with some of the other old timers.
He broke down in tears. There was a lot of because he was best buddies with Senichi Hoshino.
Yes.
He and Koji Yamamoto from the CARP, those three were kind of like, college rivals in Tokyo, and they all became stars.
Yes,
and
I remember.
They were really tight, and they hung together, and I don't want to go there because I'll start crying.
Okay, but yeah.
The thing that, get into the voting, and now I have a question for you, and I know you're not a fan of the way the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame works, but I guess as you know, and go turn around and make this about me again, I'm the only one who publishes their vote in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yes, yes.
And we need somebody like not Mr. Tibbs in in Japan. We need a Japanese person to say, come on, guys, publish your vote, take responsibility for your decisions, because these people, and I know people, pretty much all the people I know who vote for the Hall of Fame vote for Tuffy Rhodes, because at least they tell me they vote for him.
Right.
And I think the voting, the process is stuck in the sense that the people who care about whether the guy's a good player or not vote for him. And then the other 60, okay, and I'm going to cut some people some slack, the other 70%, maybe of those, maybe 10% have objectively decided that Tuffy Rhodes is not a Hall of Fame player, and I have to accept the fact that they have reasons too. There are things about Tuffy's career that you could say, well, a lot of guys who are better than him aren't in the Hall of Fame, so why should he be? And I understand that. He's not a lock in some categories. But I think of the 70% who don't vote for him, who don't put them on his on their ballots, I think 60% of them just don't care.
Yeah.
I've written about it. It's essentially, in fact, somebody asked me on Twitter, they said, you know, what makes a Hall of Famer in Japan? I said, three things. One, you're either really you're popular with the media, or have a good PR campaign. Some players, probably the worst Hall of Famer, great player, but worst Hall of Famer is Tsunemi Suda, the former relief pitcher of the Hiroshima Carp. He's in basically because he died of cancer and people made sure there was a documentary about his sad story.
Right, and I remember you speaking about that, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so you need a good PR campaign or you need to be really popular with the reporters. So if you're a young player and you want to be in the Hall of Fame sometime, suck up to the reporters. Okay? So that's rule number one. No, rule number two, be active in Japan. So rule number two is to be... So rule number one is to suck up to reporters, and rule number two is to be active. Be on TV all the time when people are voting. Be a fixture. Mm-hmm. And rule number three, the least important thing, is to have a really good career.
Right, the least important of the three. Actually, yeah. Help your team win games.
You can't do. You need all three. You need all three, but the... But
the least important.
The right. Least important is having a really good career, because you'll see that if you look, you know, in the number right now. Shingo Takatsu, who is an interesting case, is the runner-up in the voting. He will probably be elected. The former White Sox and Yakult Swallows side armor will probably, or submarine, I guess he was a side armor.
Side armor,
will
probably
be elected next year, which brings up the guys who are likely to go. So next year, it is possible we could have Randy Bass. I think Randy Bass is probably a lock to go in next year. He got 65.9% in the experts division. He had 63.2% of the vote last year. He got 65.9% this year, which is more than Tabuchi had. Masayuki Kakefu was third in the voting this year, about 20 points behind, but he made up a lot of ground, and he's a incredibly overqualified player, not as popular. He has some negatives in the number one side, but on the players division, number one was Shingo Takatsu, and he's probably going to be elected next year, and behind him, so within 2 or 3 years we will see Alex Ramirez. And Tuffy Rhodes will probably still be at 30%,
right?
Because people don't change their opinions,
right? And he actually lost a little bit of ground by minimal percentage points this year, but
I think the voting pool changes a little bit. It's getting larger. It's getting larger every year.
Right.
And I don't want to say to those people who didn't vote for Tuffy Rhodes to go and die or anything, but that's one way they can change the voting pool.
Go do something. But I've stated this about the Hall of Fame. It's not a place that I've actually started to see with the appropriate amount of respect that you should have for these places. But
respect is earned.
Yeah, and Tuffy not being in is in my opinion, it's a black eye for MPB. It's silly. How can we actually take this place seriously? And Jason Koski wrote a really good article, a column about it. So I encourage you guys to go out and read that. And it basically, I think it wraps up or sums up everything that I've said on the show. But I did ask some players, former MPP guys and current MPP guys for their comment about Tuffy and his status in the Hall of Fame. And from Tony Barnett, he says, I look at his numbers and I don't see a reason for him not to be in. Are there criteria that I don't know about? from Matt Merton says, honestly, I'm not versed enough in both Tuffy's career or the benchmarks for induction into the Hall of Fame to comment. Dennis Sarfate at the Hawks, he says, I'm not sure why he can't get in, but his numbers are deserving. Maybe he upset some sports writers while he was there, and that overshadows his performance. From agent Don Nomura, he says, Japan, hole of shame.
Yep.
And then,
way to go, Don.
Yeah. Matt Clark, honestly, I don't even know. He says, the guy did everything he could. Look at the numbers. I don't even know what they want. It's sad. The guy killed it, literally walked. They walked the guy so he wouldn't break a record. If that's not respect, I don't know what is.
Ooh.
So I really love what Matt Clark said. So,
well, you know,
get it together, Japan.
Yeah. Well, I think what will happen is there are two pools of voters on the players. The first one is the players division, the one I vote in. This requires people to be a baseball writer for 15 years.
Right.
And
hey,
the
I'm
other
in.
One is, okay, well, you
sort
have
of.
To go through a vetting process, but yes. Make sure, tell the sports people at the Omiuri. And two is the experts division. The experts division is made up of all the living members of the Hall of Fame.
Okay,
and
yes.
And sports writers of 30-plus years. This is a much more... I think people who actually care.
Yes.
It's a lot of the former Hall of Famers who really care about what you did on the field and not like which sports writers you alienated.
Correct.
And
right.
My guess is that when Tuffy, okay, there's 15 years on the ballot though, the players division. I wish Tuffy could get out of the players' division and immediately go to the experts' division because he'd be elected faster.
Probably. Well, we would hope so. We would think
so.
So
he's been on the players' division ballot now for about 7 years, and he's got 8 years, and then I think after that he's got another couple of years before he goes on to the experts' division. So it's going to be Tuffy Rhodes will get into the Hall of Fame, but I think it's going to take about 13 years. I don't see any changes unless everybody has to publish their votes. So,
All right. Well, thank you for that. Making a two-seam transition. Now, I said signs everywhere. There's signs. You said Man for Man. I don't remember them doing this song.
Was
I remember
Man for Man and the Earth Band doing
Five Man Electrical Band. That's what I remember. But maybe somebody out there. Who,
okay.
This is
okay,
1971.
Well,
I was a little kid.
Okay, so I'll man up and own that. And it wasn't Manfred Mann and the Earth Band. Okay.
But there was a man in there. Five Man Electrical Band. So we're good. So
it's like Five Guys Burgers and Fries. You know, that's the same kind of connection there. Okay.
Oh, burgers and fries. You make me hungry. So obviously, Alonzo.
Dude, it's 6:30 in the morning. Well, okay, it wasn't.
Well, it was. It is now 8:30.
It was. When I woke up, it was 6:30. Okay.
All right. So obviously, Alonzo wasn't able to discuss matters that went on with the Astros, but we've had this big sign-stealing scandal that has rocked Major League Baseball. And I've been discussing things with my cousin in New York who seems to think this is about sign stealing, and maybe I rubbed him the wrong way with my comment to him the instant that he made mention of it, and that was that anyone who thinks that this is about stealing signs is being lazy. This is about cheating, and we have had we have had some instances of sign stealing in NPV, and the last one that I remember, the last big one that I remember, was the late 90s. Now, you found something on the internet that said 1996. I found some stories that were published in 1999 referring to something that happened in 1998. I recall you had a long interview with Dr. Gail Hopkins, who used to play with the Carp, talking about one of his teammates who had mastered the art of deciphering signs from opponents, and that that all of that is part of preparation. But I would imagine that with technology, I bet NPB pays a little closer attention to what's going on in games this season with all that has gone on with the Major League and the firings. I think, you know, when heads start to roll around and you have to start ducking the heads that are rolling around out there, then I think leagues worldwide are going to pay more attention, especially with the technological advancements that we have and the possibility that teams can do something that's circumventing the rules. And yeah. And that's all we're talking about here. Sign stealing is a part of the game. It's just like stealing bases.
Well, it is to some degree, but basically the problem is that there are two environments for stealing signs. One is when there's a runner on second, and then there's every other time, which is basically you if there's a runner on second, you have a set of signs, you have a set of different signs. They're like, you know, they're coded. And
right.
Right.
So you think.
Yeah, exactly. And because the opponents can't see it ostensibly, but if they've got somebody in stands, they can see it. And if they've got, they can see your signs the rest of the time. You know, somebody in the stands, this is one of the things. You're not supposed to have people in the stands looking when you're not coding your signs. The guy's just putting down one finger and bingo. So,
right.
So that's the cheating part, because there's no, you're not trying to deceive anybody. You're just communicating with the pitcher, and it's open communication. Okay, when there's a runner on second, then those signs are coded. But if you have a video and you're going back and comparing them, or you just have a really good memory, which some people do. I mean, there are guys on second base who can pick up those signs in a heartbeat because they're really good.
Right.
But, or there's coaches who can, you know, pitchers telegraph their pitches. They, you know, they, whether it's going to be a forkball or a fastball or a curveball, there are minute ways you could find out, and everybody's watching for those, for pitchers to tip their pitches. Okay, so that's part of the game, like it or not. And I was telling John about the story about former Carp manager Marty Brown blowing up with Dragons manager Hiromitsu Ochiai, because the coach was telling the batters, the coach had spotted something to do with Hiroki Kuroda's mechanics that he could predict when he was in the process of throwing a forkball. So right. The coach would flip the forkball signal to the hitter, and they'd tee off on it, or try
or
to.
Or let it go, yeah.
If it's out of the zone. If it's in the zone, okay, swing away, baby.
Yeah, but so, that's what those third base coaches and first base
exactly.
coaches are supposed
but
to
that,
do.
But that was that's Marty Brown. Of, that was Marty Brown being Marty Brown. He just, as you know, to use a baseball word, sorry people, but I told that story to Matt Winters, and he said that was just Marty Brown having the red ass. Marty Brown's always had the red ass, so what can you do?
So, I'm not touching that.
Well, that's what they say in America. So a guy who's eager, easily aggravated.
Right. So okay.
So that happens. That is part of the game. Is, you know, you either if you're tipping your pitches, you have to own up to the fact that people are going to spot it, and there are coaches who make a living off of that. But when you're doing it from the outfield or via technology and stealing the uncoded signs, that means a solution needs to be found. Whether it's, you know, some high, you know, wearable tech, you know, I mean, do what the NFL did in America, you know, have the pitchers and catchers on a radio, you know,
yeah.
have them talking live time, you know, give me, you know, or have them, the catcher give his sign by clicking some, you know, clicking a button on his uniform and
right.
the pitcher gets it. Okay. So we're good.
That something that's, you know, more secretive, something that is not so obvious
because
cannot be coded or hacked into. That's the other part. But, you know, I'm going to watch this year. And the thing is that in MPB, you play these matchups, as I talked with Alonzo about, just the fact that you have preparation to do and you see these guys so much anyway.
Yep.
That people are going to remember your signs. You know,
yep.
it's not about the signs, so to speak. It's about the execution, too. And
oh, true.
this is all part of the game. So this is not at all what we're talking about. We are talking about circumventing the rules and surreptitiously stealing things that people cannot even guard against. If we know that you're doing that, then maybe they can do other kinds of signs that you can't interpret. But I mean,
yeah, you have to code them a different way. You have to do them like third base coaches' signs. Okay, so the scratch on the left knee is this, and was that a cough or a sign? You know, so it is interesting, and the thing that gets me in America is an uproar about it, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But in Japan, when you ask baseball people, it's like, oh yeah, these guys stole signs all the time, and we stole signs, and that's on my website on my blog is the cheating in Japan style, which is a former player telling me about. This is the one with Gail Hopkins, you know, and he said, oh yeah, the Hiroshima Carp used to cheat. And I asked Gail Hopkins about that. I said, oh yeah, yeah, it wasn't like any kind of big secret. people catch up. He says, in Japan, basically everybody was, it seems like everybody was cheating. And I think that's not quite true, but there's a certain amount of acceptability in that outcome.
Well, when you say cheating, you mean what?
Well, stealing sign. No, using like a guy in. We're talking not about picking up players tipping their pitches. We're talking about having a guy in the outfield with binoculars and a signaling system.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know. We've heard. But the point is, these are really common. I mean, these things have happened a lot in the past, and the rare case was when the Nishi Nihon Shimbun, the Nishi Nihon Sports, I think, in Fukuoka, picked up on it with the Hawks, and it got into the newspaper, and then all of a sudden, it became, all these people who know it's going on all the time went, there's gambling going on in the casino! It was outrage. It was this Japanese kind of self-righteous sounding hypocritical outrage that would make US senators blush. Okay.
Wow.
I mean, it would just blow people away how much all these people who were, you know, they were doing the Casablanca line. So, how dare you? It was like when the Lions came out and said, oh, we were paying amateurs money. And all the teams that had all been doing it, and not every team had been doing it, but basically everybody came up and got on their high horse and complained about the Lions blowing the whistle. It wasn't that the Lions were cheating or admitting to breaking the rules. This is the Lions admitted to breaking the rules.
Yeah, right.
Hey, don't talk, you know.
Don't talk about Fight Club.
Exactly, exactly. Rule number one of Japanese, you know, rule number one of Japanese baseball cheating is don't talk about Japanese baseball cheating.
Okay, all right. So yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on more how these teams go about flashing their signs during the season. And we'll talk to some of the other players. I'll make sure to talk about that with players this year.
Talk to the old guys and hear them say it. They'll all blame Katsuya Nomura, but that's
okay.
That's what they do.
All right. One note. I think we talked on the last episode about the fact that the Cincinnati Reds were the front runner for Shogo Akiyama to sign him, and they did a 3-year deal worth $21 million with a clause that says he won't be sent to the minors. I don't know about that, but I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to hit fairly well. I'm just worried about his defense and what that does to the Reds and how they go about managing him in the lineup and where they play him in the outfield. I like that ballpark for him. I'm just, you know, my faith is in his consistency in defense, and that's faith I really don't have in him. But I think he's going to be good against major league fastballs. I don't think that's going to be a problem for him.
I don't think so either. I mean, how good he's going to be is a question there. But he's shown remarkable growth as a hitter. as he's aged. Now, his defense is going to be... Everybody I know who watches him essentially likes the way he plays defense. What they don't... You know, he's got... Right now, he's sort of the Derek Jeter of center fielders in Japan. In that, his metrics are not good.
They used to be good, and now they're not, yes.
But yeah, still his metrics are not good, but he still does all the things he can in the field. You know, he's in the right, you know,
the approach is good.
Exactly. He's got the approach. He's got the effort. He's got the athleticism.
The tools have just diminished a little bit.
Yes. If you look, you'll see, and I mean, and I do think it was a thing with maybe his contact lenses or something, that he was missing balls early last year, or LASIK or something, that
correct,
his eye vision was an issue. Because it didn't happen after May. But I think, his metrics are really bad. But he's not... The thing about a player like him is he's not going to kill you because he's not making an effort. You know, he's not going to sabotage the team and make the pitcher throw his glove in anger because he's not making an effort. He's going to be the guy who's going to hurt your team... whose defensive abilities are going to hurt only because they're not better. But no one is ever going to accuse him of, you know, of being lazy. He's on the other side. He's going to pick people up with his guts and his encouragement. And so there's bad and there's bad. There's different ways of being bad or poor or below average or whatever you want to call it.
Yep, but I think he's going to do okay. All right, so we've got camp starting... Yeah, we got camp starting in a little less than 2 weeks. Jeez, I just finished. Give us a break here. But I am planning as I...
The fire, we haven't even buried the ashes from last year's camp.
Sure, exactly. there's a lot to do to get ready for the next season. But I am planning, as I told Alonzo, to visit camp a couple days. Hopefully I might be able to see Jim while I'm over there and we can hang out. So I'm going to do that. I don't know when we're going to do our next podcast, but probably right after camp opens. Yeah. And we will try to get on more platforms. I'm still in the process of doing that, but do look for us on iTunes. Hopefully in this year, we'll be on Spotify and some other places as well.
Platforms, that's like so 70s.
So seven platform shoes. All right. We really going 70s here today with the themes here. Thank you very much again to Dragon Soul for helping out. Anyone who has questions, and we would like some questions, and especially MP3s, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send your MP3s. Or questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We will talk to you next time. Enjoy your off season.
See you in the Hall of Fame, Tuffy Rhodes, someday.